This is Darcy Ungaro, and welcome to the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast. Whether it's in property, Bitcoin, shares, or business, this is a show designed to equip the everyday Kiwi make better investment decisions. The NZ Everyday Investor Podcast is brought to you by podcasts.nz in conjunction with Ungaro & Co. Financial Services. Please remember, none of this is financial advice. We hope you enjoy the show. Hey, it's your host, Darcy Ungaro. And before we get into today's show, I'm just going to tell you a little bit about it. I'm sitting in front of Aaron Torson, Managing Director of Link. And in 2005, Aaron started to play a lead role in driving the growth of Link and has turned what was once a boutique New Zealand business brokerage into an international franchise. With now over 300 brokers in five different countries, he's done it all within 10 years. And I think you're going to find it really interesting. Why are we having him on the show? New Zealanders grow wealth by owning businesses. Now, you can own shares in a business, whether it's publicly listed business or private equity, or you can actually just own a business yourself. Either way, businesses, actual things that produce goods or services, can be invested in, and you can actually develop that as an asset which will create and grow wealth for you and your family. It's a very valid way to do it, and it's how a lot of Kiwis actually do it. Outside of property, they grow businesses, and they do it well. This is where a lot of innovation is owned, is in this space. So I hope you find the show interesting. And if you do, I'd like to encourage you to put a little encouraging comment onto Facebook or something like that. And I want to thank those who have put stuff out there already for us. It kind of gives us a reason to keep going. It's awesome. So thank you for that. Now, without further ado, enjoy the rest of the show. Aaron Torson. Where is that name from?
Originally, the surname is Norwegian.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Scandinavian name.
Well done. Well, I'm probably 1/16th Norwegian.
Oh, really?
So okay. I can totally relate to you now.
That's right. A couple of Vikings.
Yeah, that's right. We have so much in common.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, so that the listeners can know a little bit about who you are.
Sure.
Yeah, whiskers on kittens. What are some of your favorite things?
Some of my favorite things? Yeah. From a personal perspective, I grew up in a boxing family. So, you know, grandfather was a champion light heavyweight and sort of grew up in that world. So I did lots of competitive boxing and pretty keen deer hunter. So try and get out and do as much of that as I can. So yeah. May have turned off a few of your vegan audience,
right.
but
a few people in disgust going, oh, there's
yeah, that's
no
right.
way I'm listening
that's
to this
right.
now.
They're spilling their soy latte. So,
<That's right. laughs>
but look, I you know, it's a big, it's been, all of that stuff's been a big part of my life, but my main love for me is my family and I've got two beautiful daughters. So cool. That's the real focus for me and yeah. Priorities change as you get older.
And where about you live outside the city, don't you? You live a bit further
yes.
out.
Yes, yeah. So I live south of Auckland in a place called Clevedon. So it's kind of a farming lifestyle type.
And to get to your home in peak traffic is probably about the same as me. It's probably about an hour or so.
Yeah,
right?
even longer sometimes.
Is
if
that
you,
right?
If you get a you know it's like if it's raining yeah. or you get an accident. So
yeah, just turn on a good podcast.
That's right, man. Podcast man. That's where it's at.
That's where it's at. On the homestead, or on the home, in the
yes,
home.
Yes, yes.
What's your favorite outdoor activity at home? Like, do you have to cut the grass, or do you have grazing for that, or?
Yeah, so I've got, I've got a tennis court at home, so I play a bit of tennis with my wife.
Cool.
I really enjoy my horse riding, and cool. So my daughter and I have both got horses, so do
perfect.
A bit of that when I can. I usually don't have enough time to do it, but I do enjoy it. You know, when you're a busy person like most of us are now, that's not unique to me. Don't want to make out like something special, but we're all so busy, family time's really precious to me now, so getting that balance right. So yeah, my home time is spending as much time as I can with my kids. And
that's good on you
out.
It's good having a place outside the city as well, because as soon as you get there, you know that you're away.
Yeah, exactly.
Work's over there, home is over here.
Yep.
Chill out, relax. Some people call it the life sentence block, but
yeah.
if you manage it right, if you get it set up, living just outside the city is best of both worlds, right?
Because oh yeah, it's unreal. And I think that when you're going 100 miles an hour, bit of serenity for me, and you get to genuinely unwind. I look out my my window and there's cows grazing and there's chickens
cool.
bouncing around in the yard. And so I think there's got to be some therapeutic and calming value to that in a pretty stressful world. So wouldn't have it any other way.
Well done. Until the water pump breaks.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, so we're going to talk about business today, because I think that for a lot of New Zealanders, and thinking of our audience, a lot of our audience may be involved in business.
Sure.
They might consider themselves an entrepreneur, or they might just be a corporate refugee who started their own business, or
sure.
they've got a small team around them and they're producing something unique. And that's what your business is all about, right?
Correct. I'm the CEO of Link, and Link is business brokerage. So we sell businesses. You think about it very much the same way as you think about real estate. So we're a real estate agent will be selling a house. We sell a business. Virtually every other respect, the process is the same. So Link is, you know, it's a New Zealand born and bred business, but has grown substantially since it started. So so that's what we do. We help people buy a business, and we help those that are in a business exit, hopefully for a good value.
And it's all about creating liquidity in something that isn't really a liquid asset at the best of time, really, because it's got to be the right time. It's got to be in good shape. And sometimes when people are getting ready to exit that business or wind it down or pass it on to someone else, possibly it's the worst shape that it's ever been because they need to get out, right?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, you know, our job is to get out there and meet business owners and start to get them thinking about it early in the process.
Right.
So there is no hurry. And there's, you know, the worst thing is when an owner of a business needs to sell. That's the worst for us. We want to get them when they choose to sell and help them get the best value for it.
On their terms, when they're ready.
Yes, yeah. And I mean, one of the big issues we've got in New Zealand is, or in fact all around the world, is the transition of wealth that's coming up. So, you know, we've all heard about the baby boomer phenomenon. So, you know, you've got an enormous number of 60 plus business owners around the world, not just New Zealand, but most of the Western world. And those business owners are getting older. They're having health problems. There's a whole bunch of reasons that they will need to sell, whether they choose to or not. So our advice to them is engage with us sooner rather than later and have decisions and choices and make sure you get the best value. There's nothing worse than when we get a call and the business owner's in her 70s or she is in her 70s and there's been a health problem or the wife has got really sick and he needs to help her or whatever. Yeah. And suddenly they can't run the business anymore and they're in a position where they have to sell it. It makes it really tough because there's no doubt it'll affect value.
Correct. Desperation.
Yeah, and you just feel for them. So, I think it's really about life planning as much as anything else for that set.
Mm. And it would be no different to really if you were one day eventually going to sell your home. You'd want to make sure that the home was in pretty good shape and that when you were ready to sell it, it wasn't because death, the bank, or divorce was on your doorstep, right?
And I think, look, with a house, it's relatively simple. And I agree with you. Even that's a good example of, you know, being prepared. But when you talk about a business, that's usually incredibly reliant on that owner who's there every day, all day, may have been for 30 years. You can walk out of your house and your house is going to still be a house. If you take that same man or woman and take them out, that key person out of the business without a transition plan, you may come back to no business. So
that's right.
It's significant. And we're talking about, you know, depending on they can be really meaningful assets in terms of value. So, they really deserve attention, thought. With, you know, we're just talking about that sort of baby boomer retirement set at the moment. But there's a real problem because nobody wants to retire. No one likes the idea of it. Nobody wants to be sitting in a nursing home or a rest home. And I think with, you know, medical care and available information and the activities that everybody, and awareness of being fit and all of the rest of those things, we're getting business owners who want to stay on because they want to keep their brains active. They want to do things. And so to those people, we're suggesting that stay involved. Do a deal with the new owner so that you can be a consultant. You can continue to work in the business in some capacity, but free up the capital that's in the business.
Correct.
And there's plenty of new, excited entrepreneurs that want to come along and buy a business.
Good.
And would love to have some support from the existing
owner.
They'd
love to have a mentor.
Expertise.
So it does work out quite well. So with going back to the baby boomer bit, because, we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg right now in a lot of spaces. I'm seeing it a lot in Auckland where people are selling up in the city and they're buying in regional New Zealand.
Yep.
You know, a little bit jealous that they can actually finally go there.
Yeah, that's right.
But I wonder, you know, like, is that, what kind of impact does that have on things like house prices here, house prices there? What impact does it have on other infrastructure like medical care down there?
Yep.
In the business world, I'm thinking probably the same thing's happening. There might be, you know, an engineering firm that's shutting up shop in West Auckland, and now the owner's moving down to Nelson and maybe buying a lifestyle orchard.
Yes.
So there's all of these impacts that these decisions of this big group of people are having. And to a certain extent, there's probably a lot of similarities with how they think and how they make decisions as well. So your business is involved in dealing with people that are
on the cusp of making these decisions, or they've almost they're almost making a decision because they didn't make decisions in the past, right? Like, how prepared are some of these guys when they're ready to offload their business?
Most are very poorly prepared. And there's a couple of reasons for that, and it's certainly no indictment on them. It's, you know, you're talking about very busy people that have been doing this for a long time. It's, you know, you get out of bed, you have your shower, you put your socks on, you go to work, and you do your day's work at your office or your factory or your manufacturing plant or your input and distribution business. You know, I think there's an expectation that that's just going to carry on. Mm. And there's a real lack of awareness in New Zealand. In fact, the same can be said for Australia and the US, but certainly in New Zealand, that how do I sell my business? What's it worth? So they'll go and talk to their accountant maybe or a solicitor. So I think the lack of awareness around the options to sell, what the business is worth, and also that there's actually not that much to do to prepare. These are not people that are, you know, interested in having to do an MBA to work out how to get out of their business. And that's where I think that a company like ours and, you know, using business brokerage, where the advice is, how do we make this simple for you? You carry on and do what you're good at, which is running the business. And our job is to maximize the value for you, to get the most value we possibly can out of this transaction. And you don't have to worry about too much. So if the accounts aren't perfect, we can explain it.
Gotcha. So don't worry about redoing the kitchen and painting the outside of the house.
Exactly.
Because somebody else is going to want to come in and make it their own anyway.
Yes. And there's things like, you know, in a business, for example, you know, there's a bunch of things that'll happen. You've got, you know, you may be paying for your personal car through the business, or God forbid, or something like that. If you've gone on an overseas trip and it wasn't really business related, but you've put it through the business, right? So we're not the IRD. That's not our job to go running and getting anyone in trouble. So we will explain to a potential purchaser that this was not business related. So that gets added back and the profit increases and value goes up in the business. So we'll do that. It's called normalizing the accounts.
Gotcha. So a lot of people would be freaking out because they had been robbing from themselves a little bit.
Exactly. Well, they think they have been.
But they think, okay, right. Yeah, but you can make an adjustment so that you can explain to the purchaser, hey, this is what's happened. You know, take that into consideration as an add back so that you can do a multiple on an accurate figure rather than.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, you get. You've got to be careful with it. It's got to withstand scrutiny. I mean, we would never recommend any level of misrepresentation. It would never succeed. Correct. You know, any decent due diligence process will establish the facts.
Correct.
So it's really about explanations, making sure that you've thought it through carefully so that you can explain it succinctly and clearly.
Right. Yeah.
And sell the dream. I mean, when you're exiting a business, someone's coming in, there's got to be excited.
That's right.
So, you know, one of the things that we get is, you know, the business owner going to great lengths to explain how great they are, how clever they are, the business relies on them, they've done this, they've, you know.
Probably the worst thing you can do, right?
Yeah, start showing them all the things and ideas they've come up with and so on. So, but all you're really doing is reinforcing the fact that they're critical and they're key to the business, and without them, it's going to be tough. Yeah, pretty much. So,
oops.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, those sorts of things are really important. But most of the advice that we give is, how do we make it simple, leave you to running the business, and get the most value. They leave us to do the other stuff. And as long as we're truthful, we represent the business honestly, you know, the best policy is the truth. Mm. Be upfront early on, go ugly early, we say.
Yeah.
So get all the bad stuff on the table from day one. You know, there's a saying in our brokers use, which is there is no perfect business. The perfect business does not exist. And that's our job, to educate potential buyers to say, look, you're not going to find this unicorn that you're looking for, this perfect business that's all the accounts are perfect, it's making loads of money, you never need to turn up.
You just know, plug it's and play. Completely put your money safe, here, you'll
it's
get a return.
Scalable, it's, you know, all these, everything's perfect. Typically, there'll be compromises somewhere. You might not be able to get the business in exactly the location you want. You know, you talked about a lot of people, if you live in Auckland, you might want to stay in Auckland, but the perfect business for you may be in Wellington or in Napier, so that could be a consideration. Or the value. All businesses are valued on the basis of risk and reward. How reliable is the future maintainable earnings? How likely is this business to continue to make profit for me? The higher that risk, the lower the value of the business. The lower that risk, the higher the value of the business tends to be.
Sure. Okay, so now in terms of what I do, so I work a lot with multiple shareholders and small businesses doing, you know, helping with buy-sell agreements and organizing insurance so that they can exit if something bad happens.
Yes.
And going back to some of the reasons that people are selling the business, How often do you see people selling their medium-sized, well, not medium-sized, still small size, let's say it's 10 employees and three shareholders, but is it quite common to see them sold because of illness of one of the key three people, for example?
Yes. So unfortunately, it's becoming more common. So it wasn't really as big an issue historically. And what tends to happen is the other, if in your scenario where there's three owners of the business, three equal owners, for example, they've got to come up with the money for, you know, they may not be in a position to pay what's required.
That's the issue.
And if they don't, if there isn't insurance in place, then they can be in a real pickle. Yeah. So like genuinely, we see issues with that. You know, our advice would be to absolutely be insured for that, because the problem is not just the financial one, because now there's a responsibility for these two remaining shareholders to try and sort this out amongst themselves. Invariably, it will lead to difficulty, arguments, value issues. Then the family of the person who's unwell or deceased is now involved in that discussion, and it can be very emotional. So our view is get it real tidy early, think about those things, put it in your, you know,
absolutely,
have the company pay for it. So it's a legitimate business expense. So,
and just get it done right. Like, you wouldn't build anything if the platform wasn't secure.
Exactly.
So get your buy-sell agreement, make sure your company constitution is sorted out, and get it all done. But you know, once you've done all the agreements, make sure that you can power those agreements if someone, because in that situation, you know, what are the other options? You'd have to go in business with the estate.
Yes, exactly. That's the problem.
Maybe the estate sells that share to the competition.
Yep.
Nightmare scenarios when you look at the value that's left behind for those remaining two shareholders, right?
Yes, exactly.
The cost of not doing it
and
right.
And also, it's incredibly unfair for the family, because they may have absolutely no interest in being involved in an engineering business in Napier or in Timbuctu.
That's right.
And now they've got this responsibility to start dealing with shareholders, discussing things they may have no idea about. Now they're going to assume a bunch of costs because they'll have to get accountants and consultants to help them. So it's not great. So, you know, I think that getting all that stuff in place is really important. Mm. Yeah, having really good shareholders agreement so it deals with things like this. Mm. So, you know, your shareholder agreement or your constitution or both can cover those types of, you know, those types of scenarios. And, you know, our advice is get all that stuff out of the way early. Give it some thought and then put it in a cupboard and hopefully you never have to look at it again.
That's right. That's right.
But do it right once at least.
Yeah, that's right. And just do something, right?
Yeah,
Rather than ignore it. Okay, so tell me how...
That's a bit doom and gloom. We've got some more positive stuff.
No, sorry. It's just going to get worse from here, Aaron.
Okay.
That's how I roll. I'll do it with a smile, though, if it makes you feel better. So the scenario where you've got a retiring person who wants to sell... just say part of the business and be a mentor, kind of like what you alluded to before. How common is that where you see previous owners or the vendors of the business still staying on board in some capacity? Is that quite common?
Yes, it is. The almost in every case, there's a small period of handover. So in fact, our standard sale and purchase agreements will have a period for vendors assistance. You know, that's a negotiable point in every deal. Usually there'll be at least a couple of months, weeks or months, depending on the type of business and how difficult it is to run.
Sure.
Potentially a year. And then beyond that, you go into an actual longer-term contract. Or the existing vendor, the seller of the business, may retain a percentage, 10 or 20%, sell 80%,
sure,
free up most of the capital, but still enjoy some of the upside growth and feel connected to the business still and have some
meaning. Yeah, because I would imagine it'll be still really important, like you say. You know, sometimes they might not be really ready to stop working full time at least, but they just cannot handle the stress and the pressure anymore of running that business. Yep. They need to offload that responsibility but still stay active mentally.
Yeah, and often it's a life balance thing. You know, you've been working away very hard for a long time. Yep. Often they've built up a pretty healthy nest egg. They've got a nice home. They've got options available. And it's like, well, hang on, you start to look at your runway's getting short. So, you know, you're in your 70s. Everyone's realistic. They've got a certain amount of time where they're physically able to go and enjoy stuff. So now's time to go and do the world trip or spend more time with your grandchildren.
Yeah.
Or, hey, I always wanted to do this trip to the States with the grandkids or my... Whatever the case may be. So this is there's a lot of value tied up in that business that can make all of that possible without having to sell your home, without having to downsize or do any of those other things, and still have a connection. So,
It's really important, isn't it? Mm. And when you think about the that transition of wealth from that generation to the younger generation, that's got to happen.
Yes.
And Link is kind of poised right at the cusp of that, isn't it? Because there's going to be quite a awesome time, probably,
yep.
where there's going to be a big transfer of wealth from that generation to that generation.
That's well, in the you know, if you look at the statistics that are that you know the coming out of the US over there, there will be in business exchanges. So the value of businesses transacting in the US in the next 15 years will be $1 trillion. Wow. You know, you just take a percentage of that for the New Zealand market. It's enormous. I mean, you've got Henry Withers at the ASB Bank who described it as a tsunami of business transactions that have to occur. Others have described it as a seismic shift in business ownership in New Zealand. There's undoubtedly an enormous transition occurring. And look, we're all aware of it, and Link's in a phenomenal position. We're the largest business brokerage in the world. But the key thing is doing the right job for our clients, the sellers. So that is really about getting the best value at the right time. Certainly there will be a lot of that transition.
That's
like
right.
a huge amount.
How important would it be then for business brokers to actually maintain good contact with prospective vendors of businesses well in advance of when that date is going to be? I imagine that'd be very important, wouldn't it?
Yes. And I mean, we've been in business since 1996, and so we've been communicating with those potential sellers for a very, very long time.
So just take me through that. How does it actually work? If it was a real estate agent, they might be getting the flyer drops, the much-loved flyer drops.
Yeah, sure.
They might get door-knocked every now and then. They might go through an open home and get called every now and then. But from a business, would brokers effectively be looking for new incorporations to build their database of people? Or how do they actually get
a
hold of people?
What tends to happen in our business is that our brokers specialize in industry. So there are literally 110 business brokers around New Zealand just as part of the Link Group. And then there are some other brands with a few as well. So you think about that number of business brokers, they can't all be doing everything. They'll be crossing paths and it would be very inefficient. So our structure is that there is an area of specialization. It might be franchising, cafes and restaurants,
childcare
centers,
services,
all of that sort of stuff. Yeah. So, manufacturing, whatever the case is. So those individual brokers, it's part of, we support them with marketing collateral and help them with funding and so on. But they'll go into each of those market sectors and they need to be known. So, they'll go and talk to industry groups. If there's an Employers and Manufacturers Association, they'll become part of that. They'll speak, they'll contribute and become part of that fabric of that industry. So, and hey, our guys, when they get started out, they go and knock on doors and they go and meet people and network and do all that good stuff, and it works. We might start doing podcasts next, I think.
There you go. Episode 1.
Yeah, that's right.
Aaron Torsen.
Yeah, that's right. I'll use this one.
There we go. That just happened.
I'll start. Can I ask you a few questions?
Please
and
go ahead,
this
Aaron.
As mine.
I'm screaming already. But I'm just thinking with my business, I've been in business for 15 years. I've never been contacted by any business broker. Now, everybody from your team's going to call me, right? But I guess it's just one of those things, right? Like with any potential sales opportunity that you've got, how do you get in there? And you have to add value clearly, right? So these guys, they must be entrenched in the area of their expertise in various places.
Yeah, and look, a big challenge for us is even that, we have a huge market share in New Zealand. We're very dominant and very established. And yet, there wouldn't be a day goes by that we don't meet people that say, oh, business broker, never heard of them. What's that?
Is that right? Really?
So we've got a huge amount of work still to do in terms of the awareness of business broking. Everybody lives in a house, whether they rent one or own it, or whatever the case may be. So real estate as an industry and as a concept is very well known. It's been around for a very long time. Everybody touches it many times through their lives. With business broking, you're dealing with a much smaller group of the population, considerably smaller. In Auckland, for example, you've got 1.6 million people that all live somewhere, but you've only got 50,000 businesses in our demographic.
So,
it's a tiny amount. And so our job is to reach out to those people and educate them about what the opportunities are, what we do, and to try and educate more about the options available, because what a lot of people are doing is going to their accountant saying, hey, I want to sell my business. The accountant will then speak to his or her own clients and try and find someone that's already a client, because they don't want to lose that person's
I get what you're saying.
Account.
Of course.
So
it's a bit of a conflict there.
It's a huge conflict. Yeah. And not only that, but it's not their job.
That's right. Not their and their valuation model might not necessarily be accurate for that sector.
Exactly.
They might think it is, but they don't really know.
Well, they often ring us asking, how do we value this?
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's a bit like going into a dentist and asking for a brain surgery. So Or maybe the other way around. But
yeah, possibly.
That they would see it as the other way around. But I guess they have a part to play in the business transaction, undoubtedly, and a good accountant is absolutely golden for everyone on both sides. So please don't mistake, it's not disparaging accountancy. Yeah. But for the purpose of selling a business, that's not their strength. They, in fact, even under the real estate rules in New Zealand, they're not allowed to market a business for sale. So they're literally limited to their own clients.
Sure. Okay.
Which doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Like, it's like saying, well, you're going to sell your house, but you can only tell these 12 people. Yeah. Hopefully one of them will want to buy it. And what happens, of course, is that affects your value, because if you've only got a few people to talk
it's not exposed to the market.
It's not exposed to the market properly. Yeah, so it's really damaging.
Yeah.
And so our job is to get out there and educate people about that. And we're on a success fee only basis in the same way as real estate is.
Marketing costs and then...
Yeah, there's
but it's minimal in terms of...
Minimal, especially when you compare it to real estate.
Or
the marketing they'd spend in their own business.
Yeah.
The marketing thing's funny, because occasionally we'll talk to a potential client and say, look, we want to sell your business and there's a marketing package here and it's $5,000 and we're going to put it here, and oh my god, what are you, $5,000, this is ridiculous, how can this. And yet we'll go through their accounts with them and see that they've spent $60,000 in the last year in marketing trying to sell these widgets that they sell, and we're going to sell them all at once. Every single one of them, and the goodwill and everything on top of it, but you don't want to spend $5,000 to market that. So
sounds like you hear that quite a bit.
Yeah, so it's baffling sometimes, but hey, we're in a commission only world, so it's just not practical for us to
cover the cost of that.
Pay everyone's marketing,
and that's normal. So in terms of some facts, because I googled just some facts around small business, I've always known that small businesses in New Zealand feel like, anyway, that it's a bit of a backbone of the country.
Yes.
And so when I Googled this, I was a little bit surprised still on how true that is. So what I've got, and this was 2018. I'll test your skills, shall
I? Yeah, go, sure.
Just in case you're wrong, maybe
you're not. Well, you can edit this, you see.
Yeah, that's right. So small businesses or employees of between 1 to 19 consists of 97% of all enterprises.
Yes.
So you would attest to that.
Yep.
Almost a third of all employees come from small businesses.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, which is, I find that fascinating. So if you think about one third of every person that's out there working right now, they're employed by a small business where someone has taken a hell of a lot of risk, put their neck out in a line, created a job for them, and they're at the mercy now of that. So I think that's quite fascinating. Eh?
And if you take in SMEs, so small, medium enterprises, so take up the larger group, but effectively private New Zealand companies, it's more like 90% of all employees in New Zealand. It's enormous. I mean, it's a backbone of all Western economies is small business. Yeah. And so, and often what we find in a place like New Zealand is that at the corporate, the banks and so on at that end of town, they're not New Zealand entities, and the money's going offshore anyway. It's quite a different dynamic. And I love it that we're building and fostering that.
There's something about New Zealand where it's just natural to be self-employed here. Like when I first came here in 95, the very first thing I did to make money, it wasn't get a job. I just started a business.
Yes.
And ended up selling it. I went through a business broker and they said I wasn't big enough, so I just sold it myself. And I was one of those ones that are way too small, right?
Yeah. But
it was actually easier for me to set up and earn money by setting up a business than it was for me to go get a job. It just felt so free here. And I think that must be appealing for those that are coming from other countries. And for New Zealanders, having that real innovative vibe, it's just such a natural expression. So it's encouraging to see, though, even at the smaller end of the spectrum, that there's a lot of activity there. It hasn't been stifled out.
Yeah, look, I think it's awesome. And the great thing about that host of small businesses are tomorrow's large businesses.
Correct.
A bunch of those will go on to become medium and large businesses that really make a stamp on the world stage.
Correct.
I mean, when we started in 96 with, four or five business brokers, we had to imagine that 20 years later we'd be, over 700
there
people around the
case
world,
in point.
Largest business brokerage in the world, so on and so forth. So those little, from acorns grow oaks. Yeah. So, it's, and I think that we really need, and there's probably not enough done in New Zealand around SMEs. There's a sort of piecemeal, you know, bits here and there, but genuine investment. And it concerns me that, you know, while this is not a political show and we don't want to get into to all of that, I
think the Party Vote Act.
Yeah. Well, but
I'm just kidding, people.
But, yeah. But my concern is that there's a misunderstanding about what's best for employment. So if you take everything else out of it, who does the employment?
Well, we've just covered that, haven't we?
These little businesses.
That's right.
These are not big, horrible corporate monsters raping and pillaging. They're not the ones that are putting the tax up or doing it. So these guys and girls are trying to make a crust. They're not all multi-zillionaires just because they own a business. And so
people like, well, not you, but people like me.
But, you know, it's real. There's a lot of people that are battling. And now, well, let's put up the minimum wage. Let's do this. Let's do that. Mm. Those, I completely understand the concept because you're trying to make life better for these for the working.
But you can't forget that there's somebody on the line.
Someone's
here on
pay
the
it.
Other end.
And who's going to pay that?
And they're the first person that's going to pay for it because their net profit disappears instantly.
It just
it's the first
work.
Thing to go.
And things like, you know, a lot of the hospitality businesses we're dealing with, you know, they rely on volume, relatively low margin, and the cost of wages is a huge part of their business. Decisions like this can have enormous unexpected consequences if they're not really carefully thought through. Mm. I think what they need to be doing better is encouraging growth, more employment, driving the business growth so that they can they've got more money to employ and pay more in better conditions. So
I get that because I'm a small business myself, and the main thing that would stop me from growing bigger, or the main not thing that stopped me, but the main thing that would concern me about the next level of growth is not the people that I need to hire, but it's the hassle around having more people.
Yes.
And it's not because they're difficult, prickly people. It's because all the stuff around it is it feels difficult.
It is.
If that's going to get harder, that's not going to be good when you aggregate that.
No, exactly. And I think it's really important for our growth that, you know, the enormous amount of our economy is driven through some SMEs. Yeah. And they're the ones doing the hiring. So you try and make it too onerous. And you think that you're helping by doing that. I'd be really interested to see what happens. I believe that adjustments are great and they're fine. It's just being very cautious about that.
Correct. Little baby moves, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. And look, the outlook for New Zealand's great. Business confidence has been up and down, and then recently I heard it wasn't great. And I mean,
it'll change next week.
It'll change next week for sure. But the fact of the matter is the businesses we're seeing coming through, the books are fantastic.
Okay.
Business is absolutely booming.
So on that, again, I'm going back to these stats. So I got this one from 2015 stats. 70% of all innovation came from small businesses. How clearly is that evident with the sales going through the books, where you can see that they've been the author and the perfecter of some amazing bit of innovation? Is that true with Kiwi businesses?
Absolutely true. Yeah. We are genuinely incredibly innovative bunch of people. And you know, we go along to various different awards and, you know, bits and pieces, and you see some extraordinary things that came out. I mean, if I give a little plug for our own business, this year we had the New Zealand Real Estate Awards. So that's the Real Estate Institute of New Zealand put on awards every year. And Link won the Innovation Award for...
Well done.
Across all disciplines. So that's including residential, commercial. You know, we're up against people like Bailey's and Colliers and CBRE and so on. And Link won the Innovation Award for our valuation tool in terms of valuing businesses. Yeah,
I've heard about this because if you're trying to value something traditionally, you're in your sector and you've got a multiplier against the income that's coming in, and there's probably some sort of formula, but it's very simple because it's just a multiplier on your income.
Yeah,
but your valuation tool, it takes into consideration a whole bunch of other stuff, right?
Yeah, it's very unique. So we, when we first conceived the idea, it was, you know, maybe 10 years ago, came up with a whole bunch of ideas about what the ideal valuation tool would look like, how it would work. No idea how to actually make it, but let's just, if we could, on a piece of paper, what would the ideal scenario look like, and then and then backfill it to make it actually work. We're producing a version of it for accountants to help them get better at valuing businesses and to give them the support they need because they don't have the data.
Sure.
So we're working on that for them. But the valuation. But going back to your point about innovation, we've been to the States trying to find valuation tools or, you know, software that might help us. And we had to create our own because no one's done it. And you think of an economy the size of the US, how they haven't come up with something like that.
But that's Kiwiism, but that's right there.
Just the way we deal with things. We say, make our own then.
That's right.
So, you know, and I think that's what's unique about us.
There's a bit of number 8 wire in there as well.
Yeah, there probably is. Probably holding it all together. The computer together, yeah.
That's right. Okay, so another question for you in terms of trends that you see, because I'd like to think that whole innovation thing is growing. I'd love to think that, and I hope it is.
Yeah.
But in terms of financing, a lot of people that have grown wealth through growing a business may have initially funded that business through equity in their own home.
Yep.
Maybe they've gained some debt funding from the bank to do that. And then there's equity financing as well. So with the businesses that you're seeing, how many of those businesses are actually funded by equity? And what does that normally look like?
Yeah, so I think the debt, so if you look at the debt and equity as your two of the options, the debt thing's interesting because everybody's house has gone up in value. And so ostensibly everybody's got security. A couple of years ago, the responsible lending code came into practice,
right.
Which has severely limited the bank's ability to lend. They want to, they'd like to, but they can't meet the criteria a lot of the time. And that's why you're seeing banks dropping their interest rates to try and attract more volume of customers, because they need to be getting these applications through, because more than ever are falling over and not going through because they can't, they meet the security requirement but not the resurfacing under the new Responsible Lending Act.
That's right.
So you see this competition now on rates because they need more volume.
Yeah, so, if it's plain vanilla, we'll take it. If it's a rocky road.
And they can't.
That's right. Legally, they can't.
They can't.
And they actually have that scapegoat, really, of increasing regulation.
And I mean, they need to get rid of the money. Yeah. So they're competing with each other on that. So there's a challenge around that, because that used to be a very easy, reliable go-to for to get a chunk of cash to go on.
Correct.
I think in a way that it's potentially a mistake, because there's a few unforeseen circumstances. So now along come options like there's a new Australian entity here called Prosper, and you can borrow money from Prosper, 100 grand, and it'll be 20% interest, and blah, and I'm not sure exactly of their lending rules, but apparently they can tell you within 24 hours. And so what's going to happen is people are going to end up paying higher interest rates to try and get the cash that they need to do the things that they need to do, and they're actually going to
might not even be enough anyway.
They might end up in a worse position with other issues.
So debt servicing costs go up
horrifically,
and accessibility to that funding line is diminished,
and it's a real problem because we need the money. New Zealand needs a load of investment. It needs billions. So tightening that up is not great. So then there is commercial lending, and so designed for that. But again, it's difficult. So that has been difficult. The equity piece is really interesting. That if you look at private equity firms that are pumping cash into to businesses, their biggest challenge is finding the opportunities.
So it seems like they've got the money, and they're keen to lend it within a certain just somewhat narrow. It has to be quite a clearly defined set of opportunities.
Well, the issue with private equity is each of them will have their own mandate and how they can apply their capital. So they've got to go away and get it signed off and approved, and then they can go and make the acquisition or acquisitions. Mm. And the issue there tends to be that you've got to fit in their criteria. And, sometimes it's a bit like doing a deal with the devil, because now you've got a partner who wants a return within 3 to 5 years, and they want to triple their money or 3 to 5 times. Basically, the rule of thumb is 3 to 5 times the investment in 3 to 5 years. And they're all more or less within that group. Nothing wrong with that. A lot of the time it's okay. A lot of the time it doesn't work.
You'll be pretty damn sure that you are going to be growing at that rate, though.
And a lot of time you're locked into that deal. And if you don't, there's penalties and there's all sorts of things that happen. Mm. Enormous amount of pressure comes on. So equity can be, that type of equity, unless you know what you're doing and you go into it with your eyes wide open, can be, there's times when it's fantastic. I mean, private equity has its place, no doubt. And I think if you understand what you're getting into and you understand the consequences of doing those deals, it can be fantastic.
You're speaking from experience, I'm guessing?
Just people we deal with.
Yeah.
So
with Link, was there any funding, external funding with Link?
Yeah. So we did private capital raise.
Okay.
And that means that we've done 2 capital raises over the last 18 months to grow our business internationally and make other acquisitions.
And how did you guys do your capital raise?
So ours was a combination of things. We used a bunch of our own, we went out to our own network, staff, brokers, We've had receptionists and administrators put in cash into the business. They believe in it. They believe in us. And there's no greater endorsement than your own people investing in your business. So that was hugely rewarding. And then we reached out a little further to sort of the friends and family network. And we put that, we had a few of our own wholesale sort of people that we brought in.
Yeah.
But then to manage all of that, the smaller transactions, we used the Snowball platform, Snowball Effect.
We had Snowball Effect.
Is Simeon in or someone like that?
Simeon was in here last 2 weeks. Yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah, it was interesting from that perspective.
Yes,
because it's very different depending on which side you're on.
So we didn't use their public facing offer, which is kind of like their crowdfunding type version. We wanted the platform so that when we had, there's a whole bunch of compliance that comes along with raising capital. So we wanted to make sure that we did it perfectly.
Yeah.
And Snowball does a great job of it. And so they using their platform, and they introduced us to some wholesale investors.
Gotcha.
So that it was a combination with them, really.
They're quite, it seems to be quite diverse. It's not, they're not, because I originally thought they were just crowdfunding and that was it.
Yep.
But no, it's a very wide way.
And I think they're moving a lot more into wholesale investors so that you can, so ours was what they call a private offer as opposed to a public offer.
That's right.
You had to inquire first and so on. But look, that was hugely successful for us. We've raised close to $7 million in the last, we're oversubscribed. But it means the way that we did it, it means that we're under no enormous pressure. We don't have a deal where if we don't do something within 3 or 4 years, we have to sell. Or there's none of that. We'll make decisions based on the best interests of the shareholders. So, I mean, my job as the CEO is to deliver value to the shareholders. And that's my number one priority, and to make sure that the funds that they've invested in us are protected and leveraged. So and so that was really, really important to us.
Sure, okay.
And then there's other forms of equity, which is just, there's angel investors, there's a bunch of other options in terms of equity.
That's right.
It's not easily available in New Zealand, and there's a bunch of high net worth individuals around.
Yeah, they're active.
Yeah, they are, but it's interesting though, they tend to have the very long pockets and the short arms problem.
Right.
so they've got plenty of money.
Yeah.
And they like the idea of investing in SMEs.
Yeah.
And until it comes to the crunch and it feels a bit nervous. So, I mean, we've got our accountancy firm is PwC, and so we talk to them and their deal team, and they're facing the same issue. They've got, there's capital there.
Yeah. Okay, interesting.
And the network, the high net worth guys, they don't want to let go of it.
Gotcha.
Private equity have got loads of money and can't find the opportunities. So there's a few little disconnects. There's a few little disconnects in there, and I think there's some work to be done. But
that funding thing is going to be a big piece.
Yes,
we need that for the innovation to increase.
Exactly.
And we need that so that we can keep on bringing in the GDP. I think cashing the checks.
It's hard to raise capital in New Zealand. It's not easy, and it's actually interesting. It's not easy for established businesses that are on a steady, solid growth path because it's not exciting enough. So,
interesting.
If you've just got a good, steady, solid, reliable business that is going to generate profit and chug along and do well,
no one cares about that.
No one cares.
It's too boring. It's not fast enough.
But if you've got a jet-powered skateboard that's going to be the latest, greatest thing, we're going to sell 10 billion of them, and they show you a hockey stick, people will suddenly gamble on it, basically, and on the basis that the potential upswing, if they invest in 5 or 6 of these ideas, one of them strikes, they make it up on the rest. But
you're right, though. There's a big, big chasm between slow and steady, consistent, reliable growth, and then wacky ideas.
Yep.
All the money seems to be going to the wacky ideas.
Yep, exactly.
Everyone's forgetting the things that actually make money.
Yep. It's really interesting. And I think that there, it was a bit like the the whole .com and the bubble that came around that online stuff.
Yeah.
I think we're in a constant state of learning and mistakes, and in the same way they talk about democracy as a great experiment, I think the entire economy is a great experiment. You think about the powerhouses of knowledge and all of the economists around the world, and how few people had any idea that the recession was going to have the impact it did, or how, or didn't see it, or didn't stop it. We've still got a lot of learning to do, and who knows what the next challenges are that we need to work out. I hope that we've learnt. I mean, we're getting better, clearly, but you do have to wonder about investments and some of the things that are going on without a genuine basis of reality.
Correct. Yeah, it's got to be a fundamental business there, right?
That's right.
Is there something being produced, something real being produced, and is there revenue actually coming in?
And it's odd because you get people that'll happily have their money invested in the bank at 3%, but they would rather invest some of that money in a completely wacky, high-risk opportunity than something that might return them 15 or 20%. That is steady, solid, safe. Like, those opportunities are real. I mean, the businesses that we're selling are 20, 25%, 30% return, some of them. I mean, it's just unheard of an investment. You can't.
That's right.
You cannot get it. So, you know, you think, well, I just don't, it's extraordinary.
Is there potentially an evolution there then where business owners, existing business owners who have quite a successful operation, they do step out, they're more of a consultant now in the future, where instead of selling the business outright, it effectively gets packaged up and sold to investors?
Yep.
Do you guys actually get involved in any of that, or is you see that growing?
Yes, we do. We do, and I think that in the future is going to release more value for the owners of the business.
Right. Yeah.
I think it means great access to capital, because you pull this money together, combination of skills and experience. So syndicating the sale of larger transactions is something we're doing right now.
Is that right? Okay.
Yep. So, and it's got real value. So, you know, there are certain businesses that are suitable for it. There are others that aren't. Mm. Where it is, we'll suggest that this is a possible syndication potential, and we'll go and put that syndicate together.
Right. So effectively, it's still a sale.
No, it's no different. But we'll help put together three or four parties that may not even know each other yet.
Yes.
Who have got similar interests, diversify their portfolio. So instead of owning one business, now you own four.
Perfect.
But with four other people. So whatever the deal is, you know.
Effectively, there could be a fund that is the childcare fund, and it's invested in five different childcares. And
yeah, exactly. And so whether it's there's a couple of funds out there now that do that. You know, there's a rest home funds and so on. I think what happens is you end up with a whole lot of additional cost that gets lumped into when you jump into a fund.
Right.
The risk reduces because it's being managed over normally a broader group of companies.
Yeah.
But your costs of the management of that increase, and the compliance and all the rest of it that goes along with it of running that.
Sure.
So where we see the value in these syndicates is that you've got none of that. You've got complete control. You've got a bunch of people. You create your own constitution. You create your own shareholders agreement. You make the rules, what the costs of managing it are.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, there's no margin for anything. It's you're paying
everybody's
costs.
Winning. So
we're all winning. Everybody's happy. And then if the syndicate's strong enough, it can go and buy four or five businesses and have your own little mini fund effectively that you control. It's exciting.
Yeah.
It's really good fun. You know, and normally those guys or girls will sit on the boards of those businesses, and it's a great way to be engaged. So we see that as an answer to potentially
the funding
a bit of a gap in the funding for that type of business. So,
sounds like it. Do you see any other innovation on around that space to help that funding gap?
Look, I think that's one of them. Overseas PE firms are coming into New Zealand with different mandates and more flexible approaches to things. So, you know, we're...
And longer arms.
And longer arms. Yeah. Well, I've just come back from Los Angeles a couple of weeks ago talking to an investment banking company there that are engaged with a lot of, you know, they've got 3,500 PE firms on their database that they deal with. The estimate is, again, the same number. Interestingly, there's $1 trillion of what they call dry powder. So uninvested funds,
basically cash
available to be invested through PE firms that has not been deployed. $1 trillion US is sitting there inactive effectively, or it's in other investments or it's doing other things,
right?
But that wants to be deployed to PE. They've got the mandates to do it and they can't spend the money. That doesn't seem right to me, and I suspect that's going to have to change, whether that turns into debt maybe rather than equity. So it's let's start lending this money. We're doing something, because it can't just sit there, you know.
Yeah. No, that's really, really fascinating stuff. So now if people want to find you, Aaron, how can they find you?
Link Business.
Yeah, okay, Link Business, not LinkedIn.
Oh, you can go you can go to LinkedIn or just go to linkbusiness.co.nz.
Perfect.
Go and look on the Meet the Team or the About Us page, and absolutely love to help anyone who's looking at selling their business.
Fantastic. And the best advice you can give to a business owner who might be selling in 10 years' time?
The best advice we can give to them is come and talk to us right now so that we can start helping you plan.
All right.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the show. Good one.
Great.
Okay, so thank you very much, Aaron Torsen from Link Business Brokers, for your support in coming along the show this morning. Two facts. 44% of self-employed people are over the age of 50, and this is growing. The other fact, small to medium-sized businesses employ the vast majority of Kiwis. So these two facts alone state something that's absolutely critical. To protect the wealth of almost every New Zealander, we need to protect small to medium-sized businesses. There's also the need to efficiently facilitate the transfer of ownership of these businesses to the next generation. So Aaron Torsen has a team, probably the largest, well, it is the largest in the world, actually, of 500 brokers that work with business owners to help them sell their enterprise at the right price at the right time. The key takeout from this discussion with Aaron, for me, is that every business owner needs to be aware of the exit plan. A lot of resource often goes into building the business, and without a clear plan of exit, much of the wealth that they've built up over time can actually quickly disappear, especially if no planning has been done. So considering who your buyer would one day be and how your business can be valuable outside of your involvement is a critical exercise to go through. And I think there's wisdom in getting in contact with a business broker years before you decide to sell, not just months, much like you would discuss it with a real estate agent when you're ready to sell. You know, like, do you need to worry about the fact that your net profit figures aren't that awesome for the last quarter? Do you need to worry about the paint flaking off your house before you sell it? Maybe not, right? There are many individuals and businesses, myself included, that work with business owners to help premeditate how to transfer ownership to key people inside or outside the business under distressing circumstances. So let's say that you're in business with two other people. You and these two others likely have a family. Consider this. What would happen if you or one of the other shareholders got really sick and could no longer contribute? What happens if one of you three shareholders actually die? And keep in mind, there's probably a 10% chance that one of those three shareholders will die before the age of 65 at least. Now, you may have a shareholder agreement, but do you have a buy-sell agreement, which facilitates the transfer of ownership in the event of death or sickness? More importantly, do all shareholders have the ability to execute this agreement, i.e. money, to buy you out? If there's no buy-sell agreement with firepower to execute it in the event of death or sickness, then watch out. You could eventually end up being in business with your business partner's partner, or worse, the competition. So you can see why having Aaron on the show was pretty relevant from my perspective at the very least. Ideally, when it's time to hand over the reins of your business, you've already been in contact with a business broker. And if this is something that you're planning on doing at some stage, I'd encourage you to get in contact with a broker from Link sooner rather than later. Now, perhaps you're at the start of a business journey and you want to ensure that you can exit your business gracefully under rubbish circumstances like poor health. Well, get in contact with me. Like anything, start with the end in mind. So there you go. I hope you enjoyed the show today. Now, please ensure that you subscribe so that you get the next episode right away, and we'll catch you next time around.
You've been listening to the NZ Everyday Investor, brought to you by podcasts.nz in conjunction with Ungaro & Co. Financial Services. I've been your host, Darcy Ungaro. Please remember to subscribe to the show, and if you'd like to learn more about what we've covered today or any of our guests, please visit us on Facebook. The NZ Everyday Investor contains information and content designed to get you to think about your investment decisions, but none of this is financial advice. Thanks for listening in, and we'll catch you next time around.